Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Baseball From Home podcast. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Joe Brand. And we're brought to you by the House of L Podcast Network. I've been covering baseball for radio stations in Chicago the last 10 years. Joe has been broadcasting minor league baseball for the last 9. He covers the White Sox. He covers the Cubs. He does it all for WGN Radio. You can find us both on Twitter. I'm at C1 McKnight. He is at Joe_Brand1. Please subscribe, rate, and review the pod. If you're listening, and if you're not listening and you're hearing this, then you're, I don't know, being held captive somewhere, I suppose. And if you are, tap a couple of times on the back of the trunk and let us know that you're okay. But if you are, rate, review, subscribe. You're probably doing one or two of those three things. We appreciate you doing it. It helps us get the podcast to other people. And that way you don't have to creepily tell them, like, hey, I got this podcast you want. Every show we cover the Cubs, we cover the White Sox. We actually will flip the coin of destiny on episode 17 to determine who goes first. But Joe, there are also some headlines in and around both of these teams and Major League Baseball as well.
I almost convinced myself that the Cubs losing 2 out of 3 games to the Minnesota Twins hurts the White Sox more than it hurts the Cubs.
Huh.
But the fact that the Cubs scored 2 runs in 3 games, it's the fashion they lost. It hurts the Cubs. The Cubs losing their own games hurts the Cubs more than it hurts the White Sox.
Meanwhile, the White Sox dropping 2 of 3 to the Reds is like, yeah, okay, all right, get back out there. Go see him tomorrow. The White Sox are a charmed team of destiny, and nothing matters to them except whenever you get into the playoffs.
That's pretty much the difference between these two teams right now.
None of any of this would be possible without David Hochberg and all of the fine folks at Team Hochberg. They helped me put a roof over my head by helping me get the mortgage that you need in order to secure a home. They were absolutely wonderful to work with. I really enjoyed working with Team Hochberg, not just because I knew David from, you know, years past doing radio stuff, but because when I signed on with David for him to help me do my mortgage, I learned his team, and the team learned me. They knew what I needed and knew what I was looking for going into the whole home buying process. They were with me every step of the way. They had my back the entire time I was going through my very first home purchase. They will have your back as well. All you got to do to get in touch with David and the fine folks at Team Hochberg, call 855-56-DAVID or head to the website 56david.com. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender, NMLS 1124061. So, as Joe mentioned, the Cubs lost 2 of 3 to the Twins. They scored all of 2 runs this weekend. They are 31-22. That's .585 ball. 95 wins if it were a 162 game season, but it's not, so we multiply everything by 2.7 because the pandemic sucks. 83.7 and 59.4 is where the Cubs are right now. The White Sox dropped 2 of 3 to the Reds, 34-19, .642 winning percentage, 104 wins. You take that over 162 game stretch, 91.8 and 51.3 because COVID sucks. Flip the coin here to start our evening and see who comes up first. It is heads, which I believe is the Cubs. So let's start there. I have to, let's start with something positive, Joe. because so much of the Cubs right now is just run your head through a brick wall kind of frustration. Not because they aren't a good team. Clearly they are good. How good is another question altogether. But they keep losing games the same way they've lost games for 5 years now. Kyle Hendricks was magnificent in game one of this series. Absolutely dynamite. And what's even better, at least for me, and maybe this is just like, you know, old habits or whatever, they die hard. But David Ross leaves him in there for all 8 innings. The prior manager is probably not doing that if it's a playoff game and a one-run game and Kyle Hendricks is starting. Kyle got all 8. He kind of needed to with the injuries that have beset more of the Cubs' bullpen. But Kyle Hendricks getting it done with strikeouts on multiple types of pitches, fastball, change, and curve, both changes and the curve, that's exactly where you want him sitting, taking one more start before a playoff series. Magnificent stuff from Kyle Hendricks.
I think it's also the factor that we're getting towards the home stretch of this season, and it's not a 162-game season, so you need these long outings because at this point in a regular season, this is the point where you would start to hit your full stride and start to see these guys going into longer into games and such. And if Kyle Hendricks has it, Kyle Hendricks has it. I don't understand why you would gamble anything with the bullpen right now. The bullpen has been better. We've talked about the improvements, and I think you're really getting to the point now where you can rely on a Jeremy Jeffress or a Craig Kimbrell possibly. But if he's got it, he's got it, and just keep rolling with it. I did not expect the struggles on Friday, though, to just totally last through the next 18 innings, and that's exactly what happened. You mentioned it, I want to say, 6 podcasts ago, that this is just the same old story for the Cubs offense time and time again. It really gets tiring to try and break it down, but it's just the same old problems. Javier Baez just continues to expand his strike zone basically every day. It seems like every time there's an opportunity with runners at second and third, Wilson Contreras pops up. I think these guys are really in their own heads. ESPN had that very dramatic shot with Chris Bryant being the only guy on the bench, and then they slowly zoom out, and he's frustrated. And it's almost like, do they plan this? Is this staged? But everyone is running out of answers and running out of adjectives for this Cubs offense.
Do you, because I'm out of adjectives and answers for the Cubs offense, I don't know that it's worth our time to sit down and just kind of berate it over and over again. And I mean, we can, and we probably will, but I wonder this, Joe. I'm trying to look at this from a somewhat different perspective. They're going to play a playoff series. And I wonder, through some of the struggles here, both in the bullpen and with the injuries in the bullpen and what we've seen out of the offense struggling, I feel oddly comfortable with David Ross at the helm of a playoff team. And, you know, I think I probably would have said that even if they were hitting a little better. I think I probably would have said that if they were hitting even a little worse than they are right now. You know, I think that means good things for David Ross in the long term, too, because I think there are some pretty obvious places where he can get better as a manager, and he's told reporters that after games, too. Like, he's mentioned times where, the game got a little quick on me here, or I've been able to slow the game down this way. I think that's a good thing for the Cubs going to a playoff series, because hopefully that means bullpen management is, you know, managed.
So the interesting thing about David Ross's decision in Sunday's game to pull Kyle Schwarber, and he said in the postgame comments that he'd like to keep it in-house, it's probably the triple that Jake Cave had in the left field that Kyle Schwarber maybe could have put a better effort on. I really hope people and Cub fans especially don't look too much into that. I don't think it's a clubhouse issue. I don't think it's like a microcosm of this team. I've said multiple times I think that this is a very hardworking, emotional team that does not second-guess themselves or second-guess their efforts. They're just struggling right now, and they're all in a funk. And yeah, different guys have been in funks years before, but right now everybody is in the worst funk that they ever have been as a Cub player. But that's just a manager doing what he needs to do. I could see that happening on a very good team. I could see that happening on a very bad team. I think David Ross is just doing what he needs to do. I've also appreciated the way he's approached the Craig Kimbrell issues earlier in the year. I think that's a big reason why Craig Kimbrell's doing better as this season has gone along. He's almost like one of those tell-you-how-it-is kind of guys, it seems. Everyone talks about how he's always been a great teammate, and therefore he'll be a great manager, and maybe that's just the case. It's just that cut and dry, but I just don't think he tries to do too much or do too little. He's just very straight with these guys, and since a lot of these guys have played with him, they already have that respect, but they just kind of continue that respect, I would say.
So it is the second consecutive start where Yu Darvish hasn't been, you know, the guy. He's fine tonight. 6 innings, 9 hits, Sunday night, I should say. 4 earned, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, and the 1 home run that he gave up. I don't worry for Darvish at this point. He said it's less than stellar stuff his last time out. We'll see what he has to say after this start. But it doesn't necessarily scare me, especially with Hendricks working the way he has. And full disclosure, I decided to go across the street to the bar to get a cheeseburger and a beverage and watch the game that way. Knowing that it was going to be an ESPN game, I had very little interest in listening to the broadcast itself. So going somewhere where the sound was down, I was fine with that. But it did mean that while I was getting home, I was listening to Pat and Ron on 670 The Score as opposed to watching the game. So you tell me how Andrew Chafin looked in his 1 inning, 1 hit, and 1 walk. I know that with Rowan Wick going down and the Cubs already, not that Rowan Wick is a left-hander, but you know what I'm saying, they're also looking for a left-hander, plus Andrew Chafin is the new body that replaces Wick. Your thoughts on Chafin, who at times can be pretty electric and at times can be kind of a hair puller.
I mean, the breaking stuff looked good. He's that bigger, meatier guy out of the bullpen that can maybe, you know, give you a little extra heat if you need it. But he looked fine. I think Chris Bryant kind of bailed him out a little bit with, a diving stop over at third base. Javier Baez made a really nice play on an infield roller. But, you know, if that guy reaches, it's just an infield single anyway. So it's not like it's solid contact off the bat. But yeah, I mean, this was... Okay, when they picked up Andrew Chafin, we called it a creative move because that's what it was. A guy you didn't really expect, a guy that can maybe get some outs, some veteran aspect. And he's one of these guys that who's the guy they got from Boston that the name is escaping me right now? Just Jason Adam?
Yeah, Jason Adam. So it's like, man, who is just like, I don't know who he is. There's like every team has 95 relievers, and Jason Adam's the guy where I'm – every time he comes into pitch, I'm staring at the screen going, I don't know who you are. Oh, it's Jason Adam. Oh, okay, great. I don't know who the hell that is.
Well, and especially now with where relievers just have up and down years like crazy. It's not like, I guess, any other baseball era once relievers actually became a role in baseball where guys have multiple years strung together in a row. But yeah, I mean, okay, a ground out to Jake Cave, which Javier Baez makes a nice play. Marwin Gonzalez, maybe a hard contact ball on the left side, but it's still on the ground. Max Kepler's on fire right now, so that's why I give him the pass, and also with Yu Darvish. So they intentionally walk Josh Donaldson, and he gets out Rosario. So, yeah, I mean, he's a good placement reliever for right now. I'm sure he could very well get blown up in a game just for his numbers with Arizona this season. But yeah, I thought he looked fine today.
Not for nothing, Max Kepler's a terrific ball player. I really like Max Kepler despite the fact that he's been bad in 2020. The guy will put together 4 or 5 game stretches where it's just like, oh my god, this looks like one of the best players in baseball. And his defense is terrific. He's got a hose out there. I know we've talked about the Twins a lot in the White Sox section of the pod, but, you know, with them playing the Cubs, we get to kind of sprinkle it around a little bit here. I think Kepler's a really good ball player who's got, you know, 2020 weird season written all over him. If I were drafting a fantasy team in 2021 and looking, you know, outfielders in the 13th round or something like that, I would love to find myself a little Max Kepler and buy low on a guy that I think is going to definitely rebound in a Twins team I kind of generally like and genuinely like too. I think, you know, I want to get back to the ESPN broadcast for just a second. I You mentioned the long shot they did of Bryant sitting alone on the bench and those cameras kind of telling a story that may or may not be there with that angle. It's strange to me to have that broadcast, you know, obviously featuring Alex Rodriguez, who was so maligned while he was playing because the broadcast loved to do that crap to him. It would take these long looks at Alex Rodriguez just after somebody had booted a ground ball or after he swatted a baseball out of a guy's hand while he was running to first, or while he was clapping his hands in between first and second on a pop-up, right? Like, it loved to make that guy the bad guy, and to see his broadcast, essentially, do the same kind of, like, oh, let's find a narrative sort of thing, and we'll just make one up if there isn't one. Like, I don't like that about Sunday Night Baseball right now. I don't like any of that stuff that's involved. And it just bugs me. Sunday Night Baseball should be more fun than it is listening to Vasgersian and A-Rod.
I was trying to figure out my opinions on a lot of the things that they did on Sunday. And it started with Ian Happ's player interview out in center field. I mean, they incorporated this, what, last year during spring training they started doing it? I mean, it might have been the Cubs that they did it first with Rizzo and Bryant, or maybe this year.
I remember Mookie Betts had one in spring where he was just terrific. Like, he was mid-sentence, and a ball got belted over his head, and it was like, oh, shit, gotta go get that one.
Yeah, something like, I'm not gonna get this one, boys, or something like that. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, and so that's where I was a little bit confused with, because I keep asking myself, why are they able to do that this year? And I'm like, oh, well, of course, there's no fans. They can, yeah, you know, hear the earpiece better. But they're doing it in these spring training games, or they did it in these spring training games, so it can't be the crowd noise. And I always thought they did it in spring training because these games don't matter. It does add a cool element. And honestly, when they first started talking to Ian Happ, I'm like, all right, let's be really critical about this. Let's see how hokey it gets, or how, you know, bushy and, you know, fluffy this interview becomes. But, you know, Ian Happ really is a good guy to interview because he's always got that scowl on the face. He's never a guy that's smiling, so you always just assume he's this standoffish human being. But he's pretty clever. He's pretty witty. He's very interesting. He talked about how he's from Pittsburgh, but really a Browns fan, and his dad teaches people who run golf courses how to grow grass the right way, and how he's such a good golfer and all these things. And then he brought up an embarrassing story of what he did against the Pirates 2 years ago when he thought he had a triple in the left field. So I took a 180 on him. I'm like, okay, you know what? This is cool. I do credit Matt Vasgersian, because that's a difficult job, because not only do you have to make sure you're asking these questions in between pitches, but I think, because, I mean, the earpiece has to be on the whole time, right? So
I would think so, yeah.
So you got to make sure that the interviewee knows that you're not talking to him, you're talking about the game, or you're talking just to the audience, and it's a very difficult thing to go through. And then, I mean, the players got to be on top of that too. And even, like, what they were talking about was how long it takes in between Yu Darvish's pitches and what challenges the outfielder has with that. And he said, well, you got to make sure that you're not too zoned into the game, because there's so much space that you have to be able to basically readjust your focus back to the game if you lose track or anything like that. And he's doing all this while he's being interviewed. Like, he's saying all this information. But then they go to Nelson Cruz, and Nelson Cruz, either his microphone is tucked underneath his jersey or something, and he just keeps talking like this a little bit. And then they just kind of double down, and they keep asking him questions. And then they go, oh, well, we had Nelson Cruz mic'd up. Here's what he had to say. And it's, put it in your pocket. Put it in your pocket. And my wife's in the other room, and I'm laughing, and she goes, what are you watching? I thought you were watching the baseball game. And I'm like, I am watching the baseball game, and I'm trying to figure out how this all fits in. But then, you know, Vasgersian kind of makes fun of it, and then it did get kind of funny. But it's really interesting, because I think those things can go really good or they can go really bad.
Yeah, and either way, you just kind of have to lean into them. I like that broadcast and others are looking for different, like, literally different angles to go shoot and players to talk with and stuff in this season. I don't care for, I mean, I'll just be honest, I don't care for Alex Rodriguez's commentary as a as an analyst. I think he's better suited for a desk job. And he has been good in those roles before. He's not kind of a live analyst to me. He doesn't have that kind of like snappy back and forth that I think you need in order to do or make that broadcast real interesting. So Rowan Wick does go down, and that Cubs bullpen is looking yet again at trying to fix some other kind of aspect of it. I would imagine that, you know, they have a playoff spot, right? I mean, they're going to have a playoff spot. I suppose the most important things for the Cubs right now, with their four games coming up against Pittsburgh and then the three against the White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field to end the season, the most important things are just making sure that as many horses and arms as you – horses and arms. Have them both, right? Have to put the arms in the horses and the horses in the arms. Save an arm, ride a horse. You got to have as many dudes as healthy as possible. So you're just in these four against Pittsburgh, especially. I would think that just manage the workload is a number one on David Ross's list.
Yeah, because I think they'll figure out the rotation just as it goes along, and clearly that's where the Cubs are most suited right now for a healthy, strong rotation. Probably one of the more competitive ones heading into the playoffs. But honestly, Connor, how crazy is it that right now the main concern of the playoffs is the offense? I mean, the first couple of weeks, it was all about the bullpen and how the heck are they going to be able to do anything without a closer. And now it's just like, yeah, you know what? The bullpen's okay. The bullpen might have some faults, but this offense needs to get turned around. And it's crazy because you would think that the offense is the aspect that would figure things out. I mean, the bullpen looked like a totally lost cause, and who knew that all these former MVPs, former MVP vote-getters, former playoff MVPs are all in a funk for the foreseeable future.
Do you think that by the time episode 18 of the podcast comes out Friday morning, that we will have playoff matchups for either the Cubs or the White Sox set? Will their destinies be written down, I guess, before the two teams play against each other for the final three games of the year?
I don't think we'll see it for the White Sox. And I think that because, remember how I was saying earlier, I was worried that losing two out of three to the Twins would hurt the Sox more than the Cubs. I can see this possibly being a little bit of a launching pad for Minnesota. I mean, they kind of got their, I don't want to say demoralized against the White Sox, but that was a four-game series that hurt. And then they come away with a 1-0 loss on Friday to the Cubs. You would think that they're just kind of down and out. But they prevail on Saturday. They get things done on Sunday. All of a sudden, they're within two games of the White Sox. And, I mean, let's not forget, the Twins beat the White Sox two series earlier this year. Probably ran into them the hottest they've been all season long in that four-game set. So this could be a chance for the Twins to really make a stronger push towards that AL Central crown. That's the reason I'll say that.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I don't know if we can see where the Sox will be matched up for the postseason. And how, that's the other thing that Sox fans have to keep in check. There could be a difference between a number one seed and a number four seed with the Chicago White Sox. I mean, and that's a big difference. That's a very, very big difference. I know either way you get home field advantage in the first round, but you're talking about a much different opponent in round two, and you're talking about less home field advantage in round two, and that's why this last week is very important for the Southsiders.
And the Twins have some easy sailing, too. They have the off day tomorrow. Well, today, I guess, if you're listening on Monday, which you likely are. Then two against the Tigers at... Yeah, they're in Minnesota for that. Then the off day again. And then three against the Reds. And the Reds are playing better. And the Reds have a shot at a postseason berth, right? I mean, in the National League, they're your eight seed right now. Milwaukee is one game off the pace on both the win and loss column behind the Reds, 27-27. That's Cincinnati. The Brewers are 26-26. And I believe the Reds have the heads-up advantage against the Brewers. They're both at, obviously, 500, the winning percentage. Then you get the Phillies, who are in seventh. But the Bryce Harper news, as best as I can understand it, is we'll see. The guy's dinged up, and nobody seems to be saying much out of Philly right now about where Bryce Harper is. He came out of the game Sunday. I don't know if it was back. I don't know if it was leg. I don't know if it was ankle. Nobody seems to be saying much after he bent down in right field trying to go after something hit out there hard and off the wall. So I don't know. That bottom part of the National League seems, you know, just about as volatile as you'd want it to be. Not to mention anything about the Cardinals, who still have another, I think it's 65 games to play in the next 4 or 5 days. So there's a lot of jockeying to be done there. The American League seems, like you said, Joe, just a little bit more set in terms of where your bottom three teams are going to land, right? It's the Astros, it's the Indians, it's the Blue Jays. Seattle is way off the pace and won't make the playoffs. But, you know, a rough week from the White Sox and some moves by the Twins might drop the White Sox from 2, like you say, to 4. And then, if you drop to 4, you are likely playing the Yankees in round 1, and I don't know any American League team who wants anything to do with that.
The one thing, aside from having a lead currently in the American League Central, but one other thing that the White Sox have working in their favor, and this was brought up by Steve Stone on Moley and Haw, they have 2 less losses, and in a world where you can make up the wins, but you can't make up the losses, that's what really helps the White Sox ahead of the Twins in this scenario. I want to go back to the National League because you bring up a really good point. It's just crammed. It's packed to the gills with, okay, like you said, the bottom 2 spots. But you take the Cardinals, who are 26-24. You take the Giants, who are 2 spots out of the playoff race. They're 26-26. They're a game behind the Cardinals. So that's why the NL is just kind of a free-for-all right now with who's where, who's getting in, who's facing who. And how crazy is it that the Dodgers, Braves, and now Padres have all clinched playoff spots, and the Cubs are number 2, and they have yet to clinch that playoff spot. I mean, that just shows what's going on in the NL Central now.
Thank you, Cardinals off days, right? I mean, that's Cardinals makeup games, I suppose, is what they're actually having to credit there. As you said, the Cardinals are 2 games off in the loss column. Cubs have lost 22. The Cardinals have lost 24. So the Cardinals will play 3 against the Kansas City Royals in the next 3 days, and then have 5 games, 5 games against the Brewers to end things over the final 4 days. Their doubleheader, last one of the year, at least that's on the schedule right now, last one of the year is at Milwaukee, or rather, I guess they'll be at Busch Stadium, but one of them will be at Milwaukee, technically speaking, in the first half of a double dip on Friday. They've gotten through those games. They've gotten through all of this baseball in way better shape than I ever thought they would. I'll just be straight up. I thought that at some point around their second doubleheader in 3 days against the Brewers this last week, that the wheels were just going to fall off for the Cardinals. I'm impressed.
Well, our conversations about this entire sport have changed monumentally because At the beginning of the year, we kept talking about how long is the season going to last. How about this fan noise that's manufactured into the ballpark? Like, those were our conversations, and now it's just become the norm so much. But honestly, yeah, the fact that, I mean, what was the final number? The Cardinals were going to play 56 games in 51 days or something like that.
54 and 49, I think is what I remember reading. But I, you know, who knows? I don't know what the hell they did anymore.
but that does, I mean, yeah, that sounds right. Everything has just changed so much about just the whole conversation of all this. It was, oh, what's it going to be like without fans in the stands? And now I kind of keep forgetting that fans aren't allowed. Like, I have to remember, oh, yeah, the NFL, sometimes fans are allowed. Like, I'm just so used to the norm now that no fans are allowed to any sporting events. How about the first week of the season when teams won, they were doing not high fives, but feet fives. You know, there was all this more precaution. Yeah, all the arm bumps, but now teams are clinching and now hugs are being had. The norms have changed, but we got to give credit to MLB because there have been zero positive tests for the past couple of go-arounds with these testings. So there have been better precautions. There have been more responsible players. And I think that's what ultimately led to having a bubble basically for the playoffs.
I'll tell you what, the weirdest thing about this season for me is the fact that, you know, we're a weekend away from the playoffs. And for the last week, I've had to wake up, you know, every morning waking up and starting to watch baseball that day, I have to remind myself that the playoffs are basically tomorrow. Like, it's just so ingrained in me to look at the total number of games played and go, is it under 60? Well, then who cares? Everything's going to change three or four more times before we get to October. And that's not it. That's just not what we're doing this year. And I really have to remind myself that the playoffs are essentially tomorrow. And this is all the baseball we get to watch. And we'll see what happens the rest of the way through. You know, that said, for the White Sox, at least on their side of the equation, I get, you know, and you mentioned the volatility in the American League, right? And the idea that the White Sox very easily could slip to fourth in the American League, and, you know, that would be unfortunate, especially having to play the Yankees. And yet I still, it's very difficult for me to watch that this last weekend series against the Reds and get upset at any one thing. They are a baseball team full of humans, the same as everyone else, except for the Yankees, because they're all sent by Satan, I think, to consume us all. But they're guys, and they had a bad series against the Reds. They hit a bunch of home runs on Saturday. They didn't do that so much on Friday or Sunday. That's your end of the ball game. I wish Dylan Cease hadn't walked to the ballpark. That's really your weekend. That's your White Sox weekend.
Well, and it's also they're playing the hits. They're doing what these White Sox have done pretty much all season long once they figured things out after getting a doubleheader sweep victim of the St. Louis Cardinals earlier in the year. They hit home runs. They had trouble with the rotation. Friday they had a bullpen day, and let's not forget the fact that these guys clinched the Thursday before, whether it was a hangover effect or not. I mean, that was a game that was somewhat meaningless, if you want to use that word.
I don't think it was a hangover effect. I think it was a literal hangover, like the actual act of being hungover, and it's okay.
Yes, and probably so. But you brought it up before the podcast, and Garrett Crochet needs mentioning on this podcast because he's the first guy since Mike Leake, I believe, to skip the minor leagues. Obviously, crazier scenario than when Mike Leake came up to the league in 2010. Ironically, at the home ballpark of Mike Leake's major league debut of Cincinnati, former ASU product. But that guy's lethal, and I don't want to go ahead and start comparing Garrett Crochet to guys that have full major league careers and who he could be in that way. But that is a guy that can be a huge piece in the playoffs when you just come in for an inning and throw, 10 or more pitches that go, 100 miles per hour or more. I used this comparison on the radio earlier today, and I'm not in love with it, but it's just because the White Sox are good right now, and this guy kind of came up out of nowhere, but he's almost getting the Bobby Jenks effect on me. Just here's this fireballer, this guy that does not care, will just blow batters away, And let's see how he does in the postseason. And he's kind of shown us what he can do at the major league level after just two innings.
I've got a bone to pick with Garrett Crochet. He's wearing his pants in like the, it's like the pull-up pants. It's with the sweatband elastic at the bottom. No one goes in to create a player and is like, you know, give me the Maddox 92 look. But without the stirrups. I don't want the stirrups.
It's joggers.
I just want socks.
It's baseball joggers.
It's like it looks like he's wearing his younger brother's baseball pants. He doesn't have pants that fit, and it drives me insane. It is ruining the enjoyment of watching him pitch. He's got bad baseball pants.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I didn't take away 2 minutes to think about it, but
of course
I totally
not.
Noticed.
You're not insane. I'm insane.
But I totally noticed it today. I'm like, wow, you don't see that. It's like a 90s look, I want to say.
It
yeah,
is.
You're absolutely right. The low pants, but they're just pulled up a little bit above the ankles.
It's like if Chris Sabo pitched, it's awful.
It's almost like his hat isn't one of those new era fitted hats. It's like one of those raggedy, loose. It's got the dimples in the front.
He's got a Zephyr. It's not even a new era. He's got to wear a Zephyr out there, poor bastard.
But yeah, no, I saw it too, and that's what I mean. It's just this unique guy. I'll be honest with you. On Friday, I was driving. I had a road trip, and so I'm bouncing around broadcasts because that's what I like to do on the MLB app. And the Reds broadcast was just drooling over this guy. It's like, oh my God, not a major league day or not a major league game ever in his life, and this is what he's doing. Oh, this guy can carve up hitters for a long time, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, that's kind of cool when you hear the other aspect of it. Whether, you know, a home broadcast, no matter what team it is, if they're just trying to blow up a guy because it's their own guy, I mean, these guys were all in on Garrett Crochet.
Nice to see Dallas Keuchel go four, give up four hits. He walked three, but he struck out seven. I thought the stuff looked good. Command was, you know, okay. Three walks in four innings for Keuchel isn't exactly what you're looking for. So we know what the assignment was for Keuchel. It was make a start, get us four innings. You'll make one more before the playoffs and, you know, just be healthy, be comfortable. Let us know when you've had enough kind of thing. And I think that's fine. I that's really probably the most important thing from the White Sox weekend. Like, yes, Garrett Crochet is fun, but he's a kid who's never thrown pitches before at Major League Baseball. He could easily give up a handful of dingers next time out, and that would be fine too, right? He is what he is. He's a rookie. Is Keuchel healthy? Do everything you can to keep him there. That allows you to go ahead and take that first series against whomever it's going to be, and if it's going to be the Yankees, then you need it to be Giolito and a healthy as possible Dallas Keuchel.
Clearly, the White Sox didn't want Dylan Cease to do Dylan Cease things today. But the way you look at today's or Sunday's loss, it's kind of okay, I guess, in the way that it happened, because they had a bullpen day on Friday. They used basically the better guys out of their bullpen on Saturday, who worked five scoreless innings right after Dallas Keuchel. And then Sunday, okay, get Steve Cishek a little bit more work, see how Garrett Crochet does in his second appearance, and all that pretty much worked out. Obviously, Ross Detweiler had his problems. I want to ask you this, though, and this is a thought I've generated, so totally shoo it down if it's asinine, but should White Sox fans kind of be rooting that Edwin Encarnacion and Nomar Mazara do poorly the rest of this week so that Ricky Renteria just has to put in Anna Bangle in right field and just has to put James McCann as the designated hitter just so he has no other options to put that out there?
I would give you, boy, that's a tough place to be. I get where you're coming from with Nomar Mazara, especially because what we're talking about there, and I'm glad you brought this up. I might have left this for the next pod, but let's do it now because that way we can ride it all the way to the playoffs. Nomar Mazara is not a good right fielder. Full stop. And if you're putting Adam Engel out there in right field, he's a terrific defensive right fielder. He's got a decent enough arm to make that work. Then what that enables you to do, at least from my perspective, is go, okay, Adam, you can kind of shift that outfield toward Eloy Jimenez and give Luis Robert that extra step and a half toward Eloy Jimenez. From wherever you're shifting guys, you cover more ground because Adam Engel is in right field. That hopefully takes some burden off Eloy Jimenez and his inability to play left. I would not be messing around with Nomar Mazara. I don't care that he went deep for the first time, like, yesterday or whatever. That's nothing to me. It's nothing to me. And it's fine that they took a flyer on Nomar Mazara, and that's a fine flyer to take if you're playing 162 games. Who knows when he gets hot and whatever. But this isn't that, and you got to have your best defensive outfield out there. And Adam Engel's hitting the ball a little well. I don't know that I can take you as far with the Edwin Encarnacion argument, only because the guy has been there before, and that's somewhat valuable to me on a team that's going to have so many guys that just haven't been to the playoffs yet. Even your veterans, like Jose Abreu's never been in a playoff game, and no, I don't think it'll matter for him all that much, but I still err toward a little bit of experience. When I'm playing Edwin, I know he's DHing, and that doesn't cost me on the defensive end, right? They're not making DHs play defense yet. Rob Manfred hasn't gotten that drunk and made those rules changes, so hopefully we're good there. Let me know if they do. And then what does worry me a little bit is if McCann is a DH, Grandal is in the lineup, and now I've got my two catchers in. And I know I've said before that I like being aggressive with that and pushing in if you've got catchers that hit. But in a short playoff series, I don't know that I'm as aggressive. I think that's a regular season strategy I like playing a little bit more often. I don't know that I love doing it as much in a short series because of what that could bind you up in with runners on base in a big situation coming around. You get caught with your pants down a little bit.
So the assessment is totally fair, and you're right for leaning towards that situation more for Mazara than Encarnacion. I'm even okay with just keeping Mazara on the bench for, you know, that lefty matchup. I mean, that's fine. He's a left-handed, I guess I can use the word power hitting outfielder, even though he has one home run with the White Sox.
Yes, he's got those one home run. He has had power
But I mean, the catcher situation, it's the playoffs, and there's no guarantee that James McCann's going to be a White Sox catcher next year. So I'm okay with seeing both those guys in the lineup because you're going to need the offense. You're going to at least want to rely on that offense. I understand the risk. I do. I brought it up multiple times, but I think that's more of a regular season problem because then you have to worry about only having one primary catcher available for a long stretch. But, I mean, it's the playoffs. You're going to need that offense. You're right. Edwin Encarnacion more than likely will get a lot of at-bats, but I like the way that James McCann is swinging the bat. I just don't want to see what happened to the Cubs in 2008 where Lou Piniella was batting Reed Johnson and playing him in center field towards like the end of the few months, and then once the playoffs come up, he brings back Kosuke Fukudome and puts him in center field when he was never playing the guy the last couple of months. Why? Because he could not hit. So I just don't understand. I don't know. I guess my 2008 Cub fandom is coming back and hoping for the not that same situation for the White Sox this year, but I don't know. Just play the hot hand.
So is Dane Dunning the Ted Lilly in that situation then? Like that'd be the nightmare scenario where Ricky doesn't get to Dane Dunning because he's the fourth guy that he wanted to throw because everybody wanted Cease in game. I don't want to go that far. I mean, Dane Dunning's starting game three. I mean, that's set. Think about that. Think about that if you're a White Sox fan. Think about how remarkable it is that you have gone into this season with all sorts of unknowns about pitchers being hurt and Kopech opting out and all that kind of stuff. And then you can confidently, as long as his leg doesn't fall off his body on Monday night, say that Dane Dunning is starting game three of a playoff series and feel really damn good about it.
Well, how about this? Right now, are you going with Reynaldo Lopez or Dylan Cease?
Keuchel Lopez. Short rest? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing because, okay, we talk about game four, But there's no game four unless you move on to the next round. And if you move on to the next round, that means Lucas Giolito and Dallas Keuchel have already pitched.
Yeah.
So what is your rotation looking like for a best of five series in the second round? It's very difficult. It's so difficult to map this whole thing out because there's so many uncertainties. There's so many unknowns. And who knows? The rules might change a day before the playoffs start for all we know.
God, winning the first two. Like, seriously, I'm sure many teams feel this way. But it seems like for the White Sox, God, you win those first two and you get that day off and then you get to hit the reset. And that means Dane Dunning is your opening night starter for round two of the playoffs, I guess. But that means it's Dane Dunning and then human and then just like a some guy for a game two and then back to Giolito and Keuchel for three and four. Like, all you got to do is have a Dane Dunning night. Okay, easy enough. And then don't all die on game two and then come back with Keuchel and Giolito and you should be good to go.
I'd like to make a motion to remove the TBA acronym and change it to human.
Some human. Guy. Guy will be throwing tonight. Here's the line for Guy tonight.
It's like in hockey when they don't want to disclose the injury. Oh, he's got a body injury.
Yeah, well, we'll see how he presents tomorrow morning. That does it for episode 17 of the Baseball From Home podcast. Really looking forward to episode 18 because we will likely have playoff matchups. Episode 19, we will definitely have playoff matchups. And then episode 20, we start the playoffs. It's going to be insane. We'll let you know how we're going to handle the playoffs with the podcast release dates. We will keep you posted. Thank you for listening. We'll check you on Friday morning for episode 18 of the Baseball for Home Pod. He's Joe, I'm Connor. Have a good one.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.